Chapter 30
If you deny me, fie upon your law. There is no force in the decrees of Venice. I stand for judgment. Answer, shall I have it?
Merchant of Venice. The silence continued unbroken by human sounds for many anxious minutes. Then the waving multitude opened and shut again, and Uncas stood in the living circle. All those eyes which had been curiously studying the lineaments of the sage as the source of their own intelligence turned on the instant and were now bent in secret admiration on the erect, agile, and faultless person of the captive. But neither the presence in which he found himself nor the exclusive attention that he attracted in any manner disturbed the self-possession of the young Mohican. He cast a deliberate and observing look on every side of him, meeting the settled expression of hostility that lowered in the visages of the chiefs with the same calmness as the curious gaze of the attentive children. But when, last in his haughty scrutiny, the person of Tamenund came under his glance, his eye became fixed as though all other objects were already forgotten. Then, advancing with a slow and noiseless step up the area, he placed himself immediately before the footstool of the sage. Here he stood, unnoted, though keenly observant himself, until one of the chiefs apprised the latter of his presence.
"With what tongue does the prisoner speak to the Manitou?" demanded the patriarch, without unclosing his eyes.
"Like his father's," Uncas replied, "with the tongue of a Delaware." At this sudden and unexpected annunciation, a low, fierce yell ran through the multitude that might not inaptly be compared to the growl of the lion as his collar is first awakened, a fearful omen of the weight of his future anger. The effect was equally strong on the sage, though differently exhibited. He passed a hand before his eyes, as if to exclude the least evidence of so shameful a spectacle, while he repeated in his low, guttural tones the words he had just heard.
"A Delaware! I have lived to see the tribes of the Lenape driven from their council fires and scattered, like broken herds of deer, among the hills of the Iroquois. I have seen the hatchets of a strange people sweep woods from the valleys that the winds of heaven had spared. The beasts that run on the mountains and the birds that fly above the trees have I seen living in the wigwams of men. But never before have I found a Delaware so base as to creep like a poisonous serpent into the camps of his nation."
"The singing birds have opened their bills," returned Uncas in the softest notes of his own musical voice, "and Tamenund has heard their song." The sage started and bent his head aside as if to catch the fleeting sounds of some passing melody.
"Does Tamenund dream?" he exclaimed. "What voice is at his ear? Have the winters gone backward? Will summer come again to the children of the Lenape?"
A solemn and respectful silence succeeded this incoherent burst from the lips of the Delaware prophet. His people steadily construed his unintelligible language into one of those mysterious conferences he was believed to hold so frequently with a superior intelligence, and they awaited the issue of the revelation in awe. After a patient pause, however, one of the aged men, perceiving that the sage had lost the recollection of the subject before them, ventured to remind him again of the presence of the prisoner.
"The false Delaware trembles lest he should hear the words of Tamenund," he said. "'Tis a hound that howls when the Yengeese show him a trail."
"And ye," returned Uncas, looking sternly around him, "are dogs that whine when the Frenchman casts ye the offals of his deer." 20 knives gleamed in the air, and as many warriors sprang to their feet at this biting and perhaps merited retort. But a motion from one of the chiefs suppressed the outbreaking of their tempers and restored the appearance of quiet. The task might probably have been more difficult had not a movement made by Tamenund indicated that he was again about to speak.
"Delaware," resumed the sage, "little art thou worthy of thy name. My people have not seen a bright sun in many winters, and the warrior who deserts his tribe when hid in clouds is doubly a traitor. The law of the Manitou is just. It is so. While the rivers run and the mountains stand, While the blossoms come and go on the trees, it must be so. He is thine, my children. Deal justly by him."
Not a limb was moved, nor was a breath drawn louder and longer than common, until the closing syllable of this final decree had passed the lips of Tamenund. Then a cry of vengeance burst at once, as it might be, from the united lips of the nation, a frightful augury of their ruthless intentions. In the midst of these prolonged and savage yells, a chief proclaimed in a high voice that the captive was condemned to endure the dreadful trial of torture by fire. The circle broke its order, and screams of delight mingled with the bustle and tumult of preparation. Hayward struggled madly with his captors. The anxious eyes of Hawkeye began to look around him with an expression of peculiar earnestness, and Cora again threw herself at the feet of the patriarch, once more a suppliant for mercy. Throughout the whole of these trying moments, Uncas had alone preserved his serenity. He looked on the preparations with a steady eye, and when the tormentors came to seize him, he met them with a firm and upright attitude. One among them, if possible more fierce and savage than his fellows, seized the hunting shirt of the young warrior, and at a single effort tore it from his body. Then, with a yell of frantic pleasure, he leaped towards his unresisting victim and prepared to lead him to the stake. But at that moment, when he appeared most a stranger to the feelings of humanity, the purpose of the savage was arrested as suddenly as if a supernatural agency had interposed in the behalf of Uncas. The eyeballs of the Delaware seemed to start from their sockets. His mouth opened, and his whole form became frozen in an attitude of amazement. Raising his hand with a slow and regulated motion, he pointed with a finger to the bosom of the captive. His companions crowded about him in wonder, and every eye was, like his own, fastened intently on the figure of a small tortoise, beautifully tattooed on the breast of the prisoner in a bright blue tint. For a single instant Uncas enjoyed his triumph, smiling calmly on the scene. Then, motioning the crowd away with a high and haughty sweep of his arm, he advanced in front of the nation with the air of a king, and spoke in a voice louder than the murmur of admiration that ran through the multitude. "Men of the Lenni Lenape," he said, "my race upholds the earth. Your feeble tribe stands on my shell. What fire that a Delaware can light would burn the child of my fathers," he added, pointing proudly to the simple blazonry on his skin. "The blood that came from such a stock would smother your flames. My race is the grandfather of nations."
"Who art thou?"
demanded Tamenund, rising at the startling tones he heard, more than at any meaning conveyed by the language of the prisoner. "Uncas, the son of Chingachgook," answered the captive modestly, turning from the nation and bending his head in reverence to the other's character and years. "A son of the great Unamis."
"The hour of Tamenund is nigh," exclaimed the sage. "The day is come at last to the night. I thank the Manitou that one is here to fill my place at the council fire. Uncas, the child of Uncas, is found. Let the eyes of a dying eagle gaze on the rising sun."
The youth stepped lightly but proudly on the platform, where he became visible to the whole agitated and wondering multitude. Tamenund held him long at the length of his arm, and read every turn in the fine lineaments of his countenance with the untiring gaze of one who recalled days of happiness.
"Is Tamenund a boy?"
at length the bewildered prophet exclaimed.
"Have I dreamt of so many snows that my people were scattered like floating sands, of Yengis more plenty than the leaves on the trees? The arrow of Tamenund would not frighten the fawn. His arm is withered like the branch of a dead oak. The snail would be swifter in the race. Yet is Uncas before him as they went to battle against the palefaces? Uncas, the panther of his tribe, the eldest son of the Lenape, the wisest sagamore of the Mohicans. Tell me, ye Delawares, has Tamenund been a sleeper for 100 winters?
The calm and deep silence which succeeded these words sufficiently announced the awful reverence with which his people received the communication of the patriarch. None dared to answer, though all listened in breathless expectation of what might follow. Uncas, however, looking in his face with the fondness and veneration of a favored child, presumed on his own high and acknowledged rank to reply. "Four warriors of his race have lived and died," he said, "since the friend of Tamenund led his people in battle. The blood of the turtle has been in many chiefs, but all have gone back into the earth from whence they came, except Chingachgook and his son."
"It is true. It is true," returned the sage,
a flash of recollection destroying all his pleasing fancies and restoring him at once to a consciousness of the true history of his nation.
"Our wise men have often said that two warriors of the unchanged race were in the hills of the Yengeese. Why have their seats at the council fires of the Delawares been so long empty?"
At these words the young man raised his head, which he had still kept bowed a little in reverence, and lifting his voice so as to be heard by the multitude, as if to explain at once and forever the policy of his family, he said aloud,
"Once we slept where we could hear the salt lake speak in its anger. Then we were rulers and sagamores over the land. But when a paleface was seen on every brook, we followed the deer back to the river of our nation. The Delawares were gone. Few warriors of them all stayed to drink of the stream they loved. Then said my fathers, 'Here will we hunt. The waters of the river go into the salt lake. If we go towards the setting sun, we shall find streams that run into the great lakes of sweet water. There would a Mohican die, like fishes of the sea in the clear springs. When the Manitou is ready and shall say, "Come," we will follow the river to the sea, and take our own again. Such, Delawares, is the belief of the children of the turtle. Our eyes are on the rising, and not towards the setting sun. We know whence he comes, but we know not whither he goes. It is enough."
The men of the Lenape listened to his words with all the respect that superstition could lend, finding a secret charm even in the figurative language with which the young sagamore imparted his ideas. Uncas himself watched the effect of his brief explanation with intelligent eyes, and gradually dropped the air of authority he had assumed, as he perceived that his auditors were content. Then, permitting his looks to wander over the silent throng that crowded around the elevated seat of Tamenund, he first perceived Hawkeye in his bonds. Stepping eagerly from his stand, he made way for himself to the side of his friend, and cutting his thongs with a quick and angry stroke of his own knife, he motioned to the crowd to divide. The Indians silently obeyed, and once more they stood ranged in their circle as before his appearance among them. Uncas took the scout by the hand and led him to the feet of the patriarch. "Father," he said, "look at this paleface. A just man, and the friend of the Delawares."
"Is he a son of Minquan?"
"Not so. A warrior known to the Yengeese and feared by the Maquas."
"What name has he gained by his deeds?"
"We call him Hawkeye," Uncas replied, using the Delaware phrase, "for his sight never fails. The Mingos know him better by the death he gives their warriors. With them he is the Long Rifle."
"La Longue Carabine!" exclaimed Tamenund,
opening his eyes and regarding the scout sternly.
"My son has not done well to call him friend."
"I call him so who proves himself such," returned the young chief with great calmness and with a steady mien. "If Uncas is welcome among the Delawares, then is Hawkeye with his friends."
"The paleface has slain my young men. His name is great for the blows he has struck the Lenape."
If a Mingo has whispered that much in the ear of the Delaware, he has only shown that he is a singing bird, said the scout, who now believed that it was time to vindicate himself from such offensive charges, and who spoke in the tongue of the man he addressed, modifying his Indian figures, however, with his own peculiar notions. "That I have slain the Maquas, I am not the man to deny, even at their own council fires. But that, knowingly, my hand has ever harmed a Delaware,
is opposed to the reason of my gifts, which is friendly to them and all that belongs to their nation." A low exclamation of applause passed among the warriors, who exchanged looks with each other like men that first began to perceive their error.
"Where is the Huron?"
demanded Tamenund.
"Has he stopped my ears?"
Magua, whose feelings during that scene in which Uncas had triumphed may be much better imagined than described, answered to the call by stepping boldly in front of the patriarch.
"The just Tamenund," he said, "will not keep what a Huron has lent." "Tell me, son of my brother," returned the sage, avoiding the dark countenance of Le Sutil, and turning gladly to the more ingenuous features of Uncas, "has the stranger a conqueror's right over you?"
"He has none. The panther may get into snares set by the women, but he is strong and knows how to leap through them."
"La Longue Carabine?"
"Laughs at the Mingos. Go, Huron. Ask your squaws the color of a bear."
"The stranger and the white maiden that came into my camp together?"
"Should journey on an open path."
"And the woman that Huron left with my warriors?"
Uncas made no reply.
"And the woman that the Mingo has brought into my camp," repeated Tamenund gravely. "She is mine," cried Magua, shaking his hand in triumph at Uncas. "Mohican, you know that she is mine."
"My son is silent," said Tamenund, endeavoring to read the expression of the face that the youth turned from him in sorrow.
"It is so," was the low answer. A short and impressive pause succeeded, during which it was very apparent with what reluctance the multitude admitted the justice of the Mingo's claim. At length the sage, in whom alone the decision depended, said in a firm voice,
"Huron, depart."
"As he came, just Tamenund," demanded the wily Magua, "or with hands filled with the faith of the Delawares. The wigwam of Le Renard Sutil is empty. Make him strong with his own."
The aged man mused with himself for a time, and then bending his head towards one of his venerable companions, he asked,
"Are my ears open?"
"It is true."
"Is this Mingo a chief?"
"The first in his nation."
"Girl, what wouldst thou? A great warrior takes thee to wife. Go, thy race will not end."
"Better a thousand times it should," exclaimed the horror-struck Cora, "than meet with such a degradation."
"Huron, her mind is in the tents of her fathers. An unwilling maiden makes an unhappy wigwam."
"She speaks with the tongue of her people," returned Magua, regarding his victim with a look of bitter irony. "She is of a race of traitors, and will bargain for a bright look. Let Tamenund speak the words."
"Take you the wampum and our love."
"Nothing hence but what Magua brought hither."
"Then depart with thine own. The great Manitou forbids that a Delaware should be unjust."
Magua advanced and seized his captive strongly by the arm. The Delawares fell back in silence. And Cora, as if conscious that remonstrance would be useless, prepared to submit to her fate without resistance.
"Hold, hold!" cried Duncan, springing forward. "Huron, have mercy! Her ransom shall make thee richer than any of thy people were ever yet known to be."
"Magua is a redskin. He wants not the beads of the palefaces."
"Gold, silver, powder, lead, all that a warrior needs shall be in thy wigwam. All that becomes the greatest chief."
"Le Sutil is very strong," cried Magua, violently shaking the hand which grasped the unresisting arm of Cora. "He has his revenge."
"Mighty ruler of providence," exclaimed Hayward, clasping his hands together in agony. "Can this be suffered? To you, just Tamenund, I appeal for mercy."
"The words of the Delaware are said,"
returned the sage, closing his eyes and dropping back into his seat, alike wearied with his mental and his bodily exertion.
"Men speak not twice."
That a chief should not misspend his time in unsaying what had once been spoken is wise and reasonable, said Hawkeye, motioning to Duncan to be silent. But it is also prudent in every warrior to consider well before he strikes his tomahawk into the head of his prisoner. Huron,
I love you not, nor can I say that any Mingo has ever received much favor at my hands. It is fair to conclude that if this war does not soon end, many more of your warriors will meet me in the woods. Put it to your judgment, then, whether you would prefer taking such a prisoner as that into your encampment, or one like myself, who am a man that it would greatly rejoice your nation to see with naked hands. Will the Long Rifle give his life for the woman? Demanded Magua, hesitatingly, for he had already made a motion towards quitting the place with his victim. No, no, I have not said so much as that, returned Hawkeye, drawing back with suitable discretion, when he noted the eagerness with which Magua listened to his proposal. It would be an unequal exchange to give a warrior in the prime of his age and usefulness for the best woman on the frontiers. I might consent to go into winter quarters now, at least 6 weeks afore the leaves will turn, on condition you will release the maiden. Magua shook his head and made an impatient sign for the crowd to open. Well, then, added the scout with the musing air of a man who had not half made up his mind, I will throw Killdeer into the bargain. Take the word of an experienced hunter. The peace has not its equal between the provinces. Magua still disdained to reply, continuing his efforts to disperse the crowd. Perhaps, added the scout, losing his dissembled coolness, exactly in proportion as the other manifested an indifference to the exchange, if I should condition to teach your young men the real virtue of the weapon, it would smooth the little differences in our judgments. Le Renard fiercely ordered the Delawares, who still lingered in an impenetrable belt around him, in hopes he would listen to the amicable proposal, to open his path, threatening by the glance of his eye another appeal to the infallible justice of their prophet. What is ordered must sooner or later arrive, continued Hawkeye, turning with a sad and humbled look to Uncas. The varlet knows his advantage and will keep it. God bless you, boy. You have found friends among your natural kin, and I hope they will prove as true as some you have met who had no Indian cross. As for me, sooner or later I must die. It is therefore fortunate there are but few to make my death howl. After all, it is likely the imps would have managed to master my scalp, so a day or two will make no great difference in the everlasting reckoning of time. God bless you, added the rugged woodsman, bending his head aside, and then instantly changing its direction again with a wistful look towards the youth. I loved both you and your father, Uncas, though our skins are not altogether of a color, and our gifts are somewhat different. Tell the Sagamore I never lost sight of him in my greatest trouble. And as for you, think of me sometimes when on a lucky trail, and depend on it, boy, whether there be one heaven or two, there is a path in the other world by which honest men may come together again. You'll find the rifle in the place we hid it. Take it and keep it for my sake. And harkee, lad, as your natural gifts don't deny you the use of vengeance, use it a little freely on the Mingos. It may unburden grief at my loss and ease your mind. Huron, I accept your offer. Release the woman. I am your prisoner. A suppressed but still distinct murmur of approbation ran through the crowd at this generous proposition, even the fiercest among the Delaware warriors manifesting pleasure at the manliness of the intended sacrifice. Magua paused, and for an anxious moment it might be said he doubted. Then, casting his eyes on Cora, with an expression in which ferocity and admiration were strangely mingled, his purpose became fixed forever. He intimated his contempt of the offer with a backward motion of his head, and said in a steady and settled voice, Le Renard Sutil is a great chief. He has but one mind. Come, he added, laying his hand too familiarly on the shoulder of his captive to urge her onward. A Huron is no tattler. We will go. The maiden drew back in lofty womanly reserve, and her dark eye kindled, while the rich blood shot like the passing brightness of the sun into her very temples at the indignity. I am your prisoner, and at a fitting time shall be ready to follow even to my death.
But violence is unnecessary, she coldly said, and immediately turning to Hawkeye added, Generous hunter, from my soul I thank you. Your offer is in vain, neither could it be accepted. But still you may serve me, even more than in your own noble intention. Look at that drooping, humbled child. Abandon her not until you leave her in the habitation of civilized men. I will not say, wringing the hard hand of the scout, that her father will reward you, for such as you are above the rewards of men. But he will thank you, and bless you. And believe me, the blessing of a just and aged man has virtue in the sight of heaven. Would to God I could hear one from his lips at this awful moment. Her voice became choked, and for an instant she was silent. Then, advancing a step nigher to Duncan, who was supporting her unconscious sister, she continued, in more subdued tones, but in which feeling and the habits of her sex maintained a fearful struggle. I need not tell you to cherish the treasure you will possess. You love her, Hayward. That would conceal a thousand faults, though she had them. She is kind, gentle, sweet, good as mortal may be. There is not a blemish in mind or person at which the proudest of you all would sicken. She is fair. Oh, how surpassingly fair! Laying her own beautiful but less brilliant hand in melancholy affection on the alabaster forehead of Alice, and parting the golden hair which clustered about her brows, and yet her soul is pure and spotless as her skin. I could say much, more perhaps than cooler reason would approve, but I will spare you and myself. Her voice became inaudible, and her face was bent over the form of her sister. After a long and burning kiss, she arose, and with features of the hue of death, but without even a tear in her feverish eye, she turned away and added to the savage, with all her former elevation of manner, Now, sir, if it be your pleasure, I will follow. I go, cried Duncan, placing Alice in the arms of an Indian girl. Go, Magua, go! These Delawares have their laws which forbid them to detain you, but I have no such obligation. Go, malignant monster! Why do you delay? It would be difficult to describe the expression with which Magua listened to this threat to follow. There was at first a fierce and manifest display of joy, and then it was instantly subdued in a look of cunning coldness. The woods are open, he was content with answering. The open hand can come. Hold, cried Hawkeye, seizing Duncan by the arm and detaining him by violence. You know not the craft of the imp. He would lead you to an ambushment and your death. Huron, interrupted Uncas, who, submissive to the stern customs of his people, had been an attentive and grave listener to all that passed. Huron, the justice of the Delawares comes from the Manitou. Look at the sun. He is now in the upper branches of the hemlock. Your path is short and open. When he is seen above the trees, there will be men on your trail. I hear a crow, exclaimed Magua with a taunting laugh. Go, he added, shaking his hand at the crowd which had slowly opened to admit his passage. Where are the petticoats of the Delawares? Let them send their arrows and their dogs to the Wyandots. They shall have venison to eat and corn to hoe. Dogs, rabbits, thieves, I spit on you. His parting jibes were listened to in a dead, boding silence, and with these biting words in his mouth, the triumphant Magua passed unmolested into the forest, followed by his passive captive, and protected by the inviolable laws of Indian hospitality. Chapter 31 Fluellen
Kill the poise and the luggage. 'Tis expressly against the law of arms. 'Tis as arrant a piece of knavery, mark you now, as can be offered in the world.
King Henry V. So long as their enemy and his victim continued in sight, the multitude remained motionless, as beings charmed to the place by some power that was friendly to the Huron. But the instant he disappeared, it became tossed and agitated by fierce and powerful passion.
Uncas maintained his elevated stand, keeping his eyes on the form of Cora until the colors of her dress were blended with the foliage of the forest. When he descended, and moving silently through the throng, he disappeared in that lodge from which he had so recently issued. A few of the graver and more attentive warriors who caught the gleams of anger that shot from the eyes of the young chief in passing followed him to the place he had selected for his meditations, after which Tamenund and Alice were removed, and the women and children were ordered to disperse. During the momentous hour that succeeded, the encampment resembled a hive of troubled bees, who only awaited the appearance and example of their leader to take some distant and momentous flight. A young warrior at length issued from the lodge of Uncas, and moving deliberately with a sort of grave march towards a dwarf pine that grew in the crevices of the rocky terrace, he tore the bark from its body, and then returned whence he came without speaking. He was soon followed by another, who stripped the sapling of its branches, leaving it a naked and blazed trunk. A third colored the posts with stripes of a dark red paint, all which indications of a hostile design in the leaders of the nation were received by the men without in a gloomy and ominous silence. Finally, the Mohican himself reappeared, divested of all his attire except his girdle and leggings, and with one half of his fine features hid under a cloud of threatening black. Uncas moved with a slow and dignified tread towards the post, which he immediately commenced encircling with a measured step, not unlike an ancient dance, raising his voice at the same time in the wild and irregular chant of his war song. The notes were in the extremes of human sounds, being sometimes melancholy and exquisitely plaintive, even rivaling the melody of birds, and then by sudden and startling transitions causing the auditors to tremble by their depth and energy. The words were few and often repeated, proceeding gradually from a sort of invocation or hymn to the deity to an intimation of the warrior's object, and terminating as they commenced with an acknowledgement of his own dependence on the Great Spirit. If it were possible to translate the comprehensive and melodious language in which he spoke, the ode might read something like the following: Manitou, 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 thou art great, thou art good, thou art wise. Manitou, Manitou, thou art just. In the heavens, in the clouds, oh, I see many spots, many dark, many red. In the heavens, oh, I see many clouds. In the woods, in the air, oh, I hear the whoop, the long yell, and the cry. In the woods, oh, I hear the loud whoop. Manitou, 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 thou art weak, thou art strong, I am slow. Manitou, Manitou, give me aid. At the end of what might be called each verse, he made a pause, by raising a note louder and longer than common that was peculiarly suited to the sentiment just expressed. The first close was solemn and intended to convey the idea of veneration. The second, descriptive, bordering on the alarming. And the third was the well-known and terrific war whoop, which burst from the lips of the young warrior like a combination of all the frightful sounds of battle. The last was like the first, humble and imploring. Three times did he repeat this song, and as often did he encircle the post in his dance. At the close of the first turn, a grave and highly esteemed chief of the Lenape followed his example, singing words of his own, however, to music of a similar character. Warrior after warrior enlisted in the dance until all of any renown and authority were numbered in its mazes. The spectacle now became wildly terrific, the fierce-looking and menacing visages of the chiefs receiving additional power from the appalling strains in which they mingled their guttural tones. Just then Uncas struck his tomahawk deep into the post and raised his voice in a shout which might be termed his own battle cry. The act announced that he had assumed the chief authority in the intended expedition. It was a signal that awakened all the slumbering passions of a nation. 100 youths,
who had hitherto been restrained by the diffidence of their years, rushed in a frantic body on the fancied emblem of their enemy, and severed it asunder, splinter by splinter, until nothing remained of the trunk but its roots in the earth. During this moment of tumult, the most ruthless deeds of war were performed on the fragments of the tree, with as much apparent ferocity as if they were the living victims of their cruelty. Some were scalped, some received the keen and trembling axe, and others suffered by thrusts from the fatal knife. In short, the manifestations of zeal and fierce delight were so great and unequivocal that the expedition was declared to be a war of the nation. The instant Uncas had struck the blow, he moved out of the circle and cast his eyes up to the sun, which was just gaining the point when the truce with Magua was to end. The fact was soon announced by a significant gesture, accompanied by a corresponding cry, and the whole of the excited multitude abandoned their mimic warfare with shrill yells of pleasure to prepare for the more hazardous experiment of the reality. The whole face of the encampment was instantly changed. The warriors, who were already armed and painted, became as still as if they were incapable of any uncommon burst of emotion. On the other hand, the women broke out of the lodges with the songs of joy and those of lamentation so strangely mingled that it might have been difficult to have said which passion preponderated. None, however, were idle. Some bore their choicest articles, others their young, and some their aged and infirm, into the forest, which spread itself like a verdant carpet of bright green against the side of the mountain. Thither Tamenund also retired, with calm composure, after a short and touching interview with Uncas, from whom the sage separated with the reluctance that a parent would quit a long-lost and just-recovered child. In the meantime, Duncan saw Alice to a place of safety, and then sought the scout, with a countenance that denoted how eagerly he also panted for the approaching contest. But Hawkeye was too much accustomed to the war song and the enlistments of the natives to betray any interest in the passing scene. He merely cast an occasional look at the number and quality of the warriors, who from time to time signified their readiness to accompany Uncas to the field. In this particular he was soon satisfied. For, as has been already seen, the power of the young chief quickly embraced every fighting man in the nation. After this material point was so satisfactorily decided, he dispatched an Indian boy in quest of killdeer and the rifle of Uncas to the place where they had deposited the weapons on approaching the camp of the Delawares, a measure of double policy, inasmuch as it protected the arms from their own fate if detained as prisoners, and gave them the advantage of appearing among the strangers rather as sufferers than as men provided with the means of defense and subsistence. In selecting another to perform the office of reclaiming his highly prized rifle, the scout had lost sight of none of his habitual caution. He knew that Magua had not come unattended, and he also knew that Huron spies watched the movements of their new enemies along the whole boundary of the woods. It would, therefore, have been fatal to himself to have attempted the experiment. A warrior would have fared no better. But the danger of a boy would not be likely to commence until after his object was discovered. When Hayward joined him, the scout was coolly awaiting the result of this experiment. The boy, who had been well instructed and was sufficiently crafty, proceeded, with a bosom that was swelling with the pride of such a confidence and all the hopes of young ambition, carelessly across the clearing to the wood, which he entered at a point at some little distance from the place where the guns were secreted. The instant, however, he was concealed by the foliage of the bushes, his dusky form was to be seen gliding like that of a serpent towards the desired treasure. He was successful, and in another moment he appeared flying across the narrow opening that skirted the base of the terrace on which the village stood with the velocity of an arrow, and bearing a prize in each hand. He had actually gained the crags and was leaping up their sides with incredible activity when a shot from the woods showed how accurate had been the judgment of the scout. The boy answered it with a feeble but contemptuous shout, and immediately a second bullet was sent after him from another part of the cover. At the next instant he appeared on the level above, elevating his guns in triumph, while he moved with the air of a conqueror towards the renowned hunter who had honored him by so glorious a commission. Notwithstanding the lively interest Hawkeye had taken in the fate of his messenger, he received Killdeer with a satisfaction that momentarily drove all other recollections from his mind. After examining the piece with an intelligent eye, and opening and shutting the pan some 10 or 15 times, and trying sundry other equally important experiments on the lock, he turned to the boy and demanded with great manifestations of kindness if he was hurt. The urchin looked proudly up in his face, but made no reply.
"Ah, I see, lad. The knaves have barked your arm," added the scout, taking up the limb of the patient sufferer, across which a deep flesh wound had been made by one of the bullets. "But a little bruised alder will act like a charm. In the meantime, I will wrap it in a badge of wampum. You have commenced the business of a warrior early, my brave boy, and are likely to bear a plenty of honorable scars to your grave. I know many young men that have taken scalps who cannot show such a mark as this. Go," having bound up the arm, "you will be a chief."
The lad departed, prouder of his flowing blood than the vainest courtier could be of his blushing ribbon, and stalked among the fellows of his age an object of general admiration and envy. But in a moment of so many serious and important duties, this single act of juvenile fortitude did not attract the general notice and commendation it would have received under milder auspices. It had, however, served to apprise the Delawares of the position and the intentions of their enemies. Accordingly, a party of adventurers, better suited to the task than the weak though spirited boy, was ordered to dislodge the skulkers. The duty was soon performed, for most of the Hurons retired of themselves when they found they had been discovered. The Delawares followed to a sufficient distance from their own encampment, and then halted for orders, apprehensive of being led into an ambush. As both parties secreted themselves, the woods were again as still and quiet as a mild summer morning and deep solitude could render them. The calm but still impatient Uncas now collected his chiefs and divided his power. He presented Hawkeye as a warrior, often tried and always found deserving of confidence. When he found his friend met with a favorable reception, he bestowed on him the command of 20 men, like himself, active, skillful, and resolute. He gave the Delawares to understand the rank of Hayward among the troops of the Yengeese, and then tendered to him a trust of equal authority. But Duncan declined the charge, professing his readiness to serve as a volunteer by the side of the scout. After this disposition, the young Mohican appointed various native chiefs to fill the different situations of responsibility, and the time pressing, he gave forth the word to march. He was cheerfully but silently obeyed by more than 200 men. Their entrance into the forest was perfectly unmolested, nor did they encounter any living objects that could either give the alarm or furnish the intelligence they needed, until they came upon the lairs of their own scouts. Here a halt was ordered, and the chiefs were assembled to hold a whispering council. At this meeting, diverse plans of operation were suggested, though none of a character to meet the wishes of their ardent leader. Had Uncas followed the promptings of his own inclinations, he would have led his followers to the charge without a moment's delay and put the conflict to the hazard of an instant issue. But such a course would have been in opposition to all the received practices and opinions of his countrymen. He was, therefore, fain to adopt a caution that in the present temper of his mind he execrated, and to listen to advice at which his fiery spirit chafed under the vivid recollection of Cora's danger and Magua's insolence. After an unsatisfactory conference of many minutes, a solitary individual was seen advancing from the side of the enemy with such apparent haste as to induce the belief he might be a messenger charged with pacific overtures. When within 100 yards, however, of the cover behind which the Delaware Council had assembled, the stranger hesitated, appeared uncertain what course to take, and finally halted. All eyes were now turned on Uncas, as if seeking directions how to proceed. "Hawkeye," said the young chief in a low voice, "he must never speak to the Hurons again." "His time has come," said the laconic scout, thrusting the long barrel of his rifle through the leaves, and taking his deliberate and fatal aim. But instead of pulling the trigger, he lowered the muzzle again, and indulged himself in a fit of his peculiar mirth.
I took the imp for a Mingo, as I'm a miserable sinner, he said. But when my eye ranged along his ribs for a place to get the bullet in, would you think it, Uncas, I saw the musician's blower. And so, after all, it is the man they call Gamut, whose death can profit no one, and whose life, if his tongue can do anything but sing, may be made serviceable to our own ends. If sounds have not lost their virtue, I'll soon have a discourse with the honest fellow, and that in a voice he'll find more agreeable than the speech of Killdeer. So saying, Hawkeye laid aside his rifle, and crawling through the bushes until within hearing of David, he attempted to repeat the musical effort which had conducted himself with so much safety and éclat through the Huron encampment. The exquisite organs of Gamut could not readily be deceived, and to say the truth, it would have been difficult for any other than Hawkeye to produce a similar noise, and consequently, having once before heard the sounds, he now knew whence they proceeded. The poor fellow appeared relieved from a state of great embarrassment, for pursuing the direction of the voice, a task that to him was not much less arduous than it would have been to have gone up in the face of a battery, he soon discovered the hidden songster. "I wonder what the Hurons will think of that," said the scout, laughing, as he took his companion by the arm and urged him towards the rear. "If the knaves lie within earshot, they will say there are two non-compassers instead of one. But here we are safe," he added, pointing to Uncas and his associates. "Now give us the history of the Mingo inventions in natural English, and without any ups and downs of voice." David gazed about him at the fierce and wild-looking chiefs in mute wonder. But assured by the presence of faces that he knew, he soon rallied his faculties so far as to make an intelligent reply. "The heathen are abroad in goodly numbers," said David, "and, I fear, with evil intent. There has been much howling and ungodly revelry, together with such sounds as it is profanity to utter in their habitations within the past hour. So much so, in truth, that I have fled to the Delawares in search of peace."
"Your ears might not have profited much by the exchange had you been quicker afoot," returned the scout a little dryly. "But let that be as it may. Where are the Hurons?"
"They lie hid in the forest, between this spot and their village, in such force that prudence would teach you instantly to return."
Uncas cast a glance along the range of trees which concealed his own band, and mentioned the name of Magua.
"Is among them. He brought in the maiden that had sojourned with the Delawares, and leaving her in the cave has put himself like a raging wolf at the head of his savages. I know not what has troubled his spirit so greatly."
"He has left her, you say, in the cave," interrupted Hayward. "'Tis well that we know its situation. May not something be done for her instant relief?"
Uncas looked earnestly at the scout before he asked, "What says Hawkeye?"
"Give me 20 rifles, and I will turn to the right along the stream, and passing by the huts of the beaver will join the sagamore and the colonel. You shall then hear the whoop from that quarter. With this wind one may easily send it a mile. Then, Uncas, do you drive in their front. When they come within range of our pieces, we will give them a blow that I pledge the good name of an old frontiersman shall make their line bend like an ashen bow. After which we will carry their village and take the woman from the cave, when the affair may be finished with the tribe according to a white man's battle by a blow and a victory, or in the Indian fashion with dodge and cover. There may be no great learning, Major, in this plan, but with courage and patience it can all be done."
"I like it much," cried Duncan, who saw the release of Cora was the primary object in the mind of the scout. "I like it much. Let it be instantly attempted."
After a short conference, the plan was matured and rendered more intelligible to the several parties. The different signals were appointed, and the chiefs separated, each to his allotted station.